Welcome back to episode 125 of the Chaos Ball Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to the second official off-season podcast. It's been a while. It's been about a month. Not a ton has happened, really, since the last podcast, which was the off-season roadmap slash the Josh Naylor gets signed episode. I'm not really going to talk about Josh Naylor in this episode. I think going into next season is when I'll try to figure out what they might get from this contract. Pete Alonso just signed a pretty big deal that makes the Naylor contract look pretty good. I mean, Pete Alonso, probably a better overall impact player than Josh Naylor, I would say. But Pete is a few years older, got a lot more money in 5 years. Well, excuse me. And Josh Naylor got $60 million less in 5 years, and he's 28 years old. So that made me feel pretty good. The winter meetings just happened, and the Mariners did do something right before the winter meetings. That's what I think most of this podcast is gonna be about. And I don't even know if it's going to be that long, because really not a whole lot else has happened in Mariners land. I mean, a lot of other things have happened in baseball. You know, Dylan Cease got a large bag dropped on his head from Toronto. They signed Cody Ponce too, who I'm very interested in seeing what he looks like in Major League Baseball in 2026. Edwin Diaz signed with the Dodgers. That wasn't shocking. Still kind of waiting for the chips to fall with the top pitchers besides Cease. Mainly like MI is probably going to be the first one to sign after him, just because there is a deadline. Framber's still available. Kyle Tucker's still there. It doesn't seem like... I've heard almost no rumors about Kyle Tucker. Even at the winter meetings, I heard literally nothing. So kind of quiet winter meetings, but the Mariners did do something right before the winter meetings, and that's what I'm going to talk about here today. Jerry made a trade. How many times have we said that? Well, in his tenure, we've said that 194 times. Just over 10 years now with the team. 194 trades. Just not insanity. It's just Jerry Dipoto, man. He just makes trades. The first trade was November 5th, 2015. Do you remember what that first trade was? And now I have this open in front of me because I'm currently doing something of a project regarding Jerry Dipoto's trade history. So I'm looking at this sheet that I imported from the lovely Jordan Schusterman, who has the Dipoto trade tracker Google sheet, doing the Lord's work and has been tracking his trades for a while. The trade was with the Rays. Of course, he kicks off his trading addiction with the Seattle Mariners by trading with his favorite trade partner, the Tampa Bay Rays. That trade has a current Mariners staffer on it, included in the trade. It has multiple guys he's traded multiple times. It was Danny Farquhar, Brad Miller, and Logan Morrison, Lomo, to the Rays for Nate Karns, Boog Powell, and CJ Riffenhauser. I don't know if that's how you say his name. I think all three of those guys he got, he ended up trading away at least. Or he ended up trading away, and then maybe he traded again for Boog Powell. All I know is that those guys all ended up getting traded again by Jerry Dipoto. That was a bad trade. Just looking at it, he lost approximately 5-6 WAR depending on if you're looking at Baseball Reference or Fangraphs. Because Logan Morrison ended up being pretty valuable in his short time with the Rays. And Boog Powell and CJ never even made it to the team for the Mariners. Nate Karns, he pitched for sure. He definitely pitched for the Mariners. That's a thing. But Jerry has made another trade. It's 10 years later, 10 years and a month later, basically, from that trade. And he finally traded Harry Ford. Now, I was going to record this pretty much right after that trade happened because that was a really major move. It came at a time when it was a little quiet in baseball, too, which I feel like is just when Jerry loves to do his business. I think when you can hear a pen drop on the cold, cold stove, Jerry likes to reignite the flame a little bit. And this, he did it. But I refrained from recording that right after the trade happened because I wanted to wait until the winter meetings were over. They were about to begin when he made that trade. So I didn't want to record. And then if a couple other major things happened, you know, not have to record another one, but I kind of would have wanted it to be a whole winter meetings recap, which there's not a whole lot to recap now. But I refrained. I refrained to do that. I also wanted to think on it for more than like a couple hours. And I think if I had recorded that podcast then, like hours after that trade happened, I think my tone would be quite different. Because, I mean, the trade, you obviously know what it was. It was Jose A. Ferrer to the Seattle Mariners from the Nationals for Harrison Ford, I believe his name is, Harry Ford, and a minor league pitcher named Isaac Lyon? Leon? Can't say I've heard of that guy before, but he's in this trade. And this really was a Mariners bomb. I wouldn't say this is like a huge passing bomb of an announcement, but it's pretty significant. Harry Ford is now and has been a consensus top 100 guy for a little while. I think he has never been the best catching prospect in baseball, but he's definitely been a top 100 guy. And I think him playing in the WBC a few years ago added to his lore playing for the UK or Great Britain, actually, not the UK. And I actually, after having a few days to just sit with this, I simply just like this trade for both sides, to be honest with you. Maybe the Mariners paid a little too much, maybe. And at face value, like trading your top catching prospect, one of your top prospects, but not your, you know, not your best one, and another minor league arm for a reliever who isn't like a bona fide stud, you know, there's still questions, plenty upside, but he's not like a dude yet. Seems like not amazing. And that was my thinking initially. I think that was most people's thinking initially. I think the idea of trading Harry Ford and a minor league pitcher for a non-elite relief arm, it kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But now that I've thought about it, there's just a ton to like from both sides. And from the Mariners' perspective, sure, you could speculate and say Harry Ford could have gotten you more. But you don't know that. I don't know that. Like, are we sure he could have gotten the Mariners more than this? They've been shopping him for over a year now, pretty much. They were actively shopping him at the deadline, and I think they probably were looking at trading him last season, even before Cal had the 2025 that he did. He was still like franchise catcher. I don't see the path to playing time for Harry Ford. We don't know if he's really going to be a catcher long term. Like, we're going to see what he looks like in left field, but it seems like we're just going to keep him catching until it really goes bad. If it does go bad, I don't know. Like, maybe this is an indicator that, like, maybe they couldn't have done better. Honestly, like, you could say maybe they could, but literally you have no idea. That's just pure fantasy land, if you can say that with confidence. With him as, and this is like with him as a headliner of a trade, I mean, not as a piece, because I think he was probably in the package for Yoan Duran this past trade deadline. The Mariners were reported to be close to getting Duran before he went to the Phillies. I imagine that Harry Ford was in that deal. I feel like he had to have been. But it wouldn't have just been him. It would have been him and at least one other big-name prospect. Like, this trade is the Harry Ford-Jose Ferrer trade. versus the Duran trade would have been the Harry Ford Gerangelo Sinche trade, you know? And this trade with Ford is the main thing that you gave up. I'm fine with this now. I feel like I was emotional when this trade was initially announced, and more upset about it than I am now, because Harry Ford's been in the system for quite some time. We finally saw him debut last season. It always just kind of feels really special and exciting when you have a prospect with any kind of hype debut for your team, and you're looking at the future, like how good could he be? But now I'm fine with it. Sometimes you just need to trade a surplus for a need. And that is exactly what this trade is. It always made sense to trade him. Everybody knew this. The Mariners knew it. It made more sense to trade him than keep him. There were still merits to keeping him, but trading him always made more sense. Like, the Mariners, they've been dealing him around for a reason. You have Cal Raleigh, who's an absolute maniac and plays almost every day. So, yeah, like, trading Harry Ford was probably always the move that they were going to do. And I think because of that, that probably hurt their leverage a little bit in potential deals for him. I have no idea if that is true, but that's kind of why I'm skeptical on the idea that they could have done better. Like, I think teams are looking at it like, yeah, we know you're going to trade this guy. Like, we probably know that you value him as a trade piece more than you value him as a backup catcher for the next 3+ years, right? So that's why I just don't know if they could have done better. I pretty much just talked myself into him being the backup catcher next season after he wasn't dealt at the deadline. The end of the season podcast, I was just like, yeah, okay, he'll be the backup next year, which would have been a good situation for the team. Maybe not necessarily for Harry Ford, but having him as a backup would be like actually incredible if he started to put things together at the plate last season or next season. But who's to say he would have if he only got that many opportunities? Like, if Cal catches another 130-ish games next season, you're having Harry Ford catch, what, 30 games and DH occasionally? Put maybe a platoon DH role if he's really hitting well. And he's getting maybe half a season of plate appearances and 25% of a full catching season behind the plate. For as much as I like the idea of him being the backup because of the upside, I also feel like I have to admit it's just probably not great for his future, right? Because Cal signed long term. I think they'll probably try to get Cal off his feet a little bit more next season, but maybe not. Maybe Cal is just like, no, you're going to play me as much as you need to play me. He kind of just seems like the type of guy to do that. And he's in his prime right now. There's no reason to not listen to him if he wants to play damn near every day and catch damn near every day. So, yeah, and I don't think Cal's going to cede his full-time catching duties anytime soon either. So while I would have liked Ford being a backup as just like a fun little dynamic of top prospect behind Cal, I think this is probably the best thing for his future, despite the fact that he's going to the Nationals. The only really bad part of this trade, I think, is that Harry Ford has to go to the Nationals organization, really. He's going to be the starting catcher, which is awesome for him and great for the Nationals. He's much better than what they currently have. Kiebert Ruiz really didn't pan out. Despite I kind of liked signing him for cheap long term, he's been pretty awful. But he's in the Nats organization, and as my oldest brother so lovingly put it, everything they touch dies, which is a little dramatic, but not entirely untrue. I mean, they might trade Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams, kicking off the Juan Soto trade chain that never ends. So, that's basically why I like this trade now. I think the Mariners addressed a need that I discussed at length in my last podcast and even at the trade deadline, which they tried to address. Lefty reliever who can take some high leverage inning responsibility. And again, you traded from a surplus. You gave up the number 40-something ranked prospect according to MLB Pipeline, a consensus top 100 catching prospect. But if, like, the Mariners, more than any other team in baseball, can do that, and they're going to be fine. they really don't need their backup catcher to be very good at hitting, which also backup catchers generally aren't good at hitting at all. Catchers on the whole really aren't good at hitting, not even just limiting it to backups. Catchers aren't very good at hitting. And then they also just took a catcher in the first round of the 2025 draft, like pick number, what, 35, I think, or something, in Luke Stevenson, who people seem incredibly high on. He had a really good start to his pro career, and people seem really high on him, and I fear that Jerry and the team might have just straight up done it again, and the scouting department popped off yet again, and they have another good hitting prospect on their hands. So if you're worried about catching prospect depth, he might just step into that void and fill it as a top 100 guy in a year or two. It's very possible. I'm already seeing him ranked pretty highly going into next season, and I'm like, it feels aggressive to call him a top 100 guy already, but the mid-season update next year, if he hits the ground running, maybe. The big con of losing Harry Ford is now you need a backup catcher. That's like the big thing that I was also a little hung up on, and a lot of other people were, where it's like, well, now you need a backup. And why is that bad? Well, it's the Mariners is really the only, like, they're the team that needs to worry about this the least, but you still need a backup catcher. And the backup catching market is incredibly bleak. Very bleak. Like I said, catchers are not good at hitting. Backup catchers really need to either be like an okay hitter, a good defender, or a really good hang, who pitchers like. Like, you look at, like, maybe the perfect backup catcher who can't hit worth a damn, Austin Hedges. The guy keeps getting drops. Why? Because he's both a really good defender, and he seems like a great hang. Like, probably a potential next good manager. Maybe for the Cleveland Guardians, after Stephen Vogt is out. Maybe, actually, that doesn't make sense. Vogt is so young. But, like, whatever. And I know a lot of people don't want him back, but Mitch Garver seems like a good hang. I don't think he's actually an okay hitter in the catching world. I don't think he's a very good defender, but he seems like a good hang. And we've all seen the reporting that him and Cal like each other, and the pitchers seem to like him, and the Mariners right after this trade said they'd be open to a reunion with him. So I think the backup catching position is at heading at terminal velocity towards Mitch Garver's return. Like, it's him or Victor Caratini or Jonah Heim, many more names that are not impressive like that at all. The Mariners have talked about, and Adam Jude reported on this, that they really need two catchers now. They need to sign a major league guy to a deal, which is probably going to be Mitch Garver, to like a few million dollars to be the backup, and then they'll probably give a minor league deal to a vet catcher to go to spring training, probably start the year in AAA. And how those usually work is they have a clause where if they get to the majors, they get on a deal that's probably worth around $2 million. And sometimes after a certain amount of time in the minors, they can just elect free agency. If they don't make it to the major leagues, to go sign with another team, they'll do a deal like that. Like, they'll probably be looking at, like, who are the other old catchers available? Looking at the list on MLB trade rumors, Austin Barnes, Eric Haas, Tom Murphy. Hey, maybe, honestly, you know what? Maybe they'll give a contract to Tom Murphy. Christian Vasquez, Jacob Stallings. Those seem like a minor league deal with a major league option type of guy. You know what? It feels like they're going to re-sign Mitch Garver, and he'll be on like a $4 million deal or something like that. Really not much. Why the hell not give a Tom Murphy minor league deal with a major league option? You know? What the hell? And, you know, if Mitch is well-liked in the clubhouse, sure. Why not? Like, if he's well-liked and also already knows the pitching staff really well, he's been there for 2 years, if the pitchers also like him, just sure. Like, his production at the plate last season actually was fine for a backup catcher, if you look at it through the backup catching lens. And Mitch Garver, the backup catcher on a few million dollars a year deal, 1 year deal, catching 30 games a year and being a good hang in the clubhouse, is a lot more palatable than Mitch Garver at $12 million AAV flailing in the box as the backup catcher slash full-time platoon DH. Expectation plays a huge part and obviously played a massive part in how the fans felt about him, how I felt about him, how everyone pretty much felt about him. He was signed as a guy who was going to mash lefties as a DH and catch occasionally, and he just didn't do that. And it also just wasn't a good watch. Like, he showed his ability to draw walks, which has always been one of his big strengths, but the slug just was not there. Honestly, his ability to draw walks also led to him, I think, honestly being too passive at times at pitches in the zone that he should have been trying to mash. But again, he knows the staff. On a deal that's probably $5 million or less, I'm assuming probably around there. Sure. Backup catcher, the least of our worries, because Cal Raleigh exists and is the starter. And thinking about, like, I've seen the take that's like, now if Cal gets hurt, you're not going to have a good option. If Cal Raleigh gets hurt for a long period of time next season, Harry Ford is not the saving grace in that situation. Nobody is. That is a situation you never plan for. Because in that situation, you're screwed either way, even if you had Harry Ford available then. So that's not a good reason to hold on to him. But enough about catchers. Now, Jose A. Ferrer, who is this guy? I'm sure you've seen plenty of people talk about him. Is he just a left-handed Carlos Vargas, or is he actually good? There's plenty to like about him. He first, it's Jose A. Ferrer, because there's multiple Jose Ferrers, so I think we have to make that distinction for now until he's on the team, and then we can just, you know, reference the Ferrer in the Mariners bullpen. I'm going to list out the pros and cons that I wrote about him. Let's start with the pros. Hint, there's more pros than cons on this list. He throws really hard from the left side. Not many guys do that. A lot more guys do that now than in the past, but throwing really hard is still a good thing that you want to do in the bullpen, despite it being more commonplace in today's baseball environment. But from the left side, it's still a lot more rare to get a guy who can touch triple digits like he can. Like, among qualified relievers last season, qualified lefty relievers last season, only Aroldis Chapman and Gregory Soto and Garrett Clevenger averaged a higher fastball velocity. Garrett Clevenger was a guy on my list, and now I can take him off the list because that would be weird to trade for him after doing this. But throws really hard from the left side. That's a good thing. Nope, no issue there. He gets a ton of ground balls, which is good. Lots of ground balls as a pitcher, generally good thing. It can leave you open to the Babbitt monster, which he kind of got zapped by that last year when you give up a lot more ground balls. Like, his sinker gets a ton of ground balls, but also it averaged like a 300 average last season. I said this a lot. I think it's hard for people to wrap their head around it. Ground balls go for hits more than fly balls. It's just fly balls, you don't want to give up a ton because they turn into home runs and even, like, you know, doubles and triples more often than ground balls do. But ground balls leave you open to, again, getting babbipped. But ultimately, ground ball percentage being really high is good as a pitcher. Among qualified relievers last season, only Yoan Duran, who is a demon, and Tim Hill, who throws... Tim Hill, a submariner. He's down there, though. Only those two guys had a higher ground ball rate. His ground ball rate last year was 62.6%. That is incredibly high. His FIP the last two seasons has been excellent, which FIP, good predictor of future performance. Now, his 2024 FIP did not predict his 2025 ERA, but his FIP was still great this season, which tells you something. And really, if you're looking at a reliever's FIP over 1 year, the sample is still so small. So looking at it for 2 years, the sample honestly is still kind of small. That's like half a season for a full-time starter. But he threw so many innings last year and a lot between 2024 and 2025 that I feel good about this. His FIP was great. His ERA last year was not great, but his FIP was 3.03. That is very, very good. And the season before, it was a 2.76. And then going deeper into these advanced stats for all my Sierra heads out there, it's also excellent. 3.27 in 2024 and a sterling 2.85 Sierra last season. If you want to go even deeper, his xFIP, his expected FIP last season, was the best of his career, 3.09, a half run better than his 2024 FIP. So the things that he's doing, for the most part, are very good. Why could a FIP be higher or lower than an ERA? Luck is a big factor in this, obviously. And quality of contact is also a big factor in this. If a guy who could, a guy might strike out a lot of people, get a lot of ground balls, not walk a ton of guys, but maybe occasionally he leaves a meatball in there and just gets absolutely destroyed. So quality of contact matters, but that's why Sierra exists. Sierra tells you as well that he's not giving up super hard contact when he gives up contact. Sierra takes quality of contact given up into play in their estimation of ERA. But why could FIP be low? Again, it's the ground ball rate. It's luck. It's BABIP a little bit. It's some combination of BABIP, situational pitching, what have you. The FIP being that low is a really good indicator of why people are pretty high on him and why the Mariners gave up that amount of why they gave up Harry Ford to get him. It's funny, the past couple transactions before, like, the winter meetings ones, it was like Dylan Cease signs a mega deal with the Blue Jays, Devin Williams signs a big deal with the Mets, and the Mariners give up Harry Ford for Jose Ferrer, and like old baseball heads must be just losing it looking at those guys' ERAs last year and seeing how much money they're getting and how the Mariners just traded Harry Ford for a guy with like a four. What did he even have last year? I have it in front of me. A 4.48 ERA last year. Old baseball guys are like, what the hell is going on? These guys suck. But that's why stats exist, and that's why teams know more than old baseball fans. Continuing down the pros here, the pro list. He's very fun to watch. Electric stuff. That counts if you're trading for a guy. You know, he's fun to watch with electric stuff. And another one of my pros down here is he doesn't walk guys a lot. I'll talk about this more later. But it's not like he's wild. He's in the zone a lot, and his stuff is just crazy. It's so much fun to watch a lefty throw that hard. Another pro. He fulfills a big need for this team in the bullpen, like I talked about. Another pro on this list, he's 25. He turns 26 on July 1st of next year. So he's still in the prime age. And is under team control through the 2029 season. Part of why Harry Ford was traded for him. Like, a high price for a reliever like this, sure, but teams value control a lot. They value team control a ton. And so you always will see a higher price for a guy who isn't even in arbitration yet. And yeah, he is a reliever. But if you look at the ceiling, and if he reaches anywhere close to that ceiling, he could be very valuable and a very affordable reliever for this team for the next four seasons. My last pro on this list is his walk rate. 4.9% last season. One of the better walk rates in the league, in the pen. Just does not walk guys a lot, lets him hit it. Part of why his ERA was high, too. I mean, he gets a lot of contact and a lot of ground balls, like I said, and which is generally good. But it's near impossible to barrel him up. Like, he can get hit hard, but his barrel rate given up was so low, which is why he gets so many ground balls, and Sierra loves him. And that also just fits the Mariners' philosophy of living in the zone, not giving up free passes. Their staff is, that's kind of the ethos of their pitching staff, is lots of fastballs and sliders, but also just letting guys hit it and not trying and trying to limit free passes as much as possible. It plays into their ballpark they pitch in, their home ballpark, and it's just how they've built this pitching staff. So he kind of flows right into their core pitching philosophies already, I feel like. And that's my list of pros. That was a lot of them. Let's get into the cons. I have two, but they're big cons. They're pretty big cons on the pro and con list. My first one, his K rate. Now, this comes with like a slight asterisk, because a 21.9% K rate, while on its face, for a reliever you want in the back of the bullpen, is not amazing, which is why I asked, is he just a left-handed Carlos Vargas a little bit ago, which was really rude of me to say that, because he's 21.9% K rate would be like, what, 7% or 6% higher than Carlos Vargas's K rate. He's not Carlos Vargas. He's better. Again, 21.9% K rate. Looking at that for a reliever who throws as hard as he does is like, oh, that's kind of low. But a 21.9% K rate paired with a near 63% ground ball rate is pretty great. Like, as a pairing there, like, that is a good combo to have. But if there are hopes that this guy is like a legit dog for your eighth and ninth innings for the foreseeable future, he's going to need to strike more guys out than that. Part of the reason why his ERA wasn't great last season, like I talked about why you can get BABIP sometimes with FIP, is that his strand rate was not great. And that tracks. When guys are on base, ground balls are still good. Ground balls can get double plays and outs. But when guys are on base and you're a relief pitcher, believe it or not, ground balls are worse than strikeouts. Ground balls turn into hits more often than fly balls. And fly balls and ground balls, any contact at all, again, it's crazy, both turn into hits more often than strikeouts do. So you need to be able to strike guys out to get out of jams as a relief pitcher who wants to be like a potential great, amazing closer or setup guy in this league. So that's an area for improvement. Despite like the K minus walk rate is good too, because he doesn't walk guys. But I think the walk rate, I think he can afford to both walk more guys and get less ground balls if he can strike more guys out, which I think is probably where the Mariners are headed with him. My second and last con here, he's a reliever. So, and a pitcher. So this is a con, because like we literally just saw with Gregory Santos, they break all the time, whether it be physically and or mentally. Like Gregory Santos, definitely work ethic concerns there. That has been reported on. It's not speculation. But still, being a reliever, it is quite literally always, and being a pitcher at all, it's quite literally always more risky than getting a position player. They break a lot, especially in modern baseball. There is a world here where Jose A. Ferrer is actually god-awful for the Seattle Mariners next year, the following year, however you want to slice it, and this trade's a big failure. There's also a world where he's awesome for the team and is pretty healthy. And there's a world for everything in between. But because he's a reliever who throws really hard, he's liable to break. Like, his age obviously helps. He's in his mid-20s. 25, great age, I would know. But this also makes me look at that team control through 2029 with skepticism, because, like, yeah, sure, hypothetically, that's great. But it's not something I'm going to be boasting about because he's a reliever. Like, that's really the con here, is he's liable to break. But that's not, you don't not do the deal because of that. Then you would never acquire any potentially great pitchers at all. But that's still just like in the back of your mind as a modern baseball fan is like, oh, okay, he throws really hard. Pretty much everyone gets surgery now. It's always what you got to think about. But that's it for the cons. The downside is pretty clear, but the upside is worth spending Harry Ford on, in my opinion, honestly, especially for a team that is set up to be good for the next couple of years, is set up to try to go on another deep playoff run like they just did, try to win the division. You need a really good bullpen in today's day and age to do that, and they were so close last year. The bullpen is not the ultimate reason why they lost, but it would have been helpful to have a slightly better bullpen going into the playoffs last year. And so he's going to help that, and he's going to help lengthen the pen a lot. And then, like, looking at his pitch mix, which I haven't really talked about yet, he's a heavy, like, heavy sinker baller. I know. Shocking info, given up how much I just talked about his ground ball rate. But last season, he threw 71% sinkers, 22% changeups, and 7% slider. That was his only three pitches. I do think the Mariners likely have a plan for him, considering that they traded for him. I would wager a bet that he's going to use that slider more next season, probably in an effort to strike more guys out, like I talked about. But his sinker's pretty awesome. So that he's still probably going to be predominantly a sinker pitcher and a guy who gets a lot of ground balls. I don't think that is going to change. I just think some of the ratios are probably going to change. And again, he should keep throwing. It's not like he should give it up. He can throw it 100 miles an hour. And his changeup had quite a nice whiff rate last season too. So that is good to have in your arsenal for right-handed batters as well, because if you want to truly be a big dog, you want to be able to get both sides of the plate out, not just lefties. But the good thing, he was super effective against lefties, which also is not a shock. I love that Baseball Savant now tells you the pitch mix versus either side of the plate. And if you listen to the show, that means you know ball, which means that it will not shock you that versus left-handed hitters, he threw a lot of sinker, almost no changeups, and 18% sliders, 78% sinker, and 4% changeup. And then versus right-handed batters, can you guess? He still threw a lot of sinker, 67%, almost no sliders at 2%, and then more changeups at 31%. So he has the ability to attack both sides of the plate pretty well. I will be pretty fascinated to see and read what changes or tweaks they make with him in the offseason, head into spring training, if any, or at least like when they get to when pitchers and catchers report. Because frankly, he could keep it pretty much the same and probably be fine. But like I said, my guess is the slider usage is going to increase. Maybe a new pitch in the mix, maybe a cutter. I don't know. Which gets me to how they're going to use him. Hearing the team talk about him, he's basically going to be that fourth big dog to complement. I've said dog a lot in this episode. The fourth big dog to complement the Munoz Brash Spire, let's call it a dog pound, huh? Which is a pretty formidable foursome. Without even thinking about the rest of the bullpen, which has my sweet boy Edward Bizzardo and company, he has the ceiling of a lockdown ninth inning guy. But we know Munoz has that job locked up. But he gives you just another high-leverage lefty, which they really needed. Like, I'm sure he'll be deployed against lefties more often than righties, but him, along with Spire, both can get right-handed hitters out when they need to. So they wouldn't be considered lefty specialists, but they will obviously be deployed against lefties more often. There will be a tons of high leverage opportunities against good left-handed hitters as well, which is where Ferrer will be called upon. And you can use him in interesting ways too, like because he gets so many ground balls and can strike guys out, but he gets so many ground balls that you can afford to try to put him in the middle of an inning with one out and a guy on first base against a lefty or even a righty. And you know, 60% of the time he's getting a ground ball and that might be a double play. So the big question here is how good he'll be, how effective he's going to be. Because if he does improve on that strikeout rate, let's say, he has that ceiling of a closer where you don't care about the handedness of hitters coming up. You can kind of just put him in against everyone. There's a reality in the future where Jose Ferrer can be deployed at any time you want. And that's what excites you about this. And he could be here for a while. He'll be, but either way, I think he's going to be exceptionally good against left-handed hitters. Having him and Spire together will be great because Brash is an ideal guy to complement both of them on the other side of the platoon coin. And then Andrés Muñoz is one of the best closers in baseball. And so it leaves you going into the year feeling better about the bullpen than he did last year, with always some other additions or subtractions to come along with it. And this also helps with any regression from any of those guys I just mentioned, like if Munoz or Spire or Brash or anyone else gets worse, you ideally hope that Ferrer can take more responsibility away from them if that happens, right? So I like this move. I like Jose Ferrer. And that's my spiel on that trade. Mariner stuff from the winter meetings was really slow. Like, it appears that they are looking pretty much for a second baseman and or, like, part-time DH guy, which is pretty much what Jorge Polanco is. The reporting right now is they're not pursuing a third baseman, which I disagree with that strategy. I think they should be looking for a second baseman and a third baseman. But, you know, I don't run the team. I do think that likely means an everyday third baseman, though. Because if you, let's say, you get Brendan Donovan, you have that positional flexibility to play him at second or third or corner outfield even. Like if they aren't pursuing an everyday like full-time third baseman, I think Gino, we already know they're out. I don't think there's been any reporting that they're bringing him back. I think all parties involved were like, yep, thank you for your service, sir. Adios. I am really intrigued to see what his contract looks like, because he's a weird player coming off an insanely good season, but is not going to get as much money as he would have gotten in like the early 2000s. But it means like Bregman's off the table, which obviously like they were never going to sign Bregman, even though Boris is being a little sneak about it and calling the Mariners like, hey, you want Bregman? And then Jared Poto's probably like, no, we're good. Good luck, buddy. But it also means probably no Akimoto, which is sad. I really would like them to take a swing on him, frankly. And I assume that also means they're not going to like trade for Alec Bohm, which I'm not particularly interested in, or trade for like Nolan Arenado, which I'm also not particularly interested in. And it means that we're heading towards probably a Ben Williamson, Colt Emerson, platoony type situation at third base, potentially on opening day, which would be something. Like, it might just be Colt Emerson full-time third base on opening day. If the reporting from the last week turns out to be true and they don't address third base at all this offseason and they just, like, not get greedy, but get aggressive and say, Colt, we think you're ready right now. J.P. Crawford has this shortstop position for one more year. You are a better third base option than J.P. or Cole Young, so that's where we're going to put you. We believe you right now. And if they start him on opening day and he wins Rookie of the Year, they get that draft pick, and I'm sure they would love to get that again like they got with Julio. So that's where they're at with the reporting. It sounds like I think they're still trying to bring back Polanco, but it sounds like it's just kind of really up in the air for him right now. Ketel Marte is still on the table, even though there's reports that they're looking for a Juan Soto-type package, which, of course, they're going to say that. Doesn't mean they're going to get one. But he's a really good player, locked up on a very reasonable average annual value deal for the next, 6 years? Juan Soto was generational, but had how many years left on his deal? 2 when they got traded? So I get what they're saying. They're not going to come out and be like, yeah, we're looking for a pretty reasonable deal for Ketel's value. No, Diamondbacks are going to be like, yeah, we want all of your prospects and your best pitching prospect who's already made it to the major leagues for Ketel Marte. They're obviously going to say that. So the Mariners are still in the mix, but a lot of teams are in the mix. I think every contender pretty much is going to want to get him, besides I'm assuming the Mets, since they just got Marcus Semien, but you're looking at like the Red Sox are probably a huge, huge team in the Ketel Marte sweepstakes. A lot of other teams are. Blue Jays, I'm sure, would love to get him, even though they should just bring back Bo to play second base. And then Brandon Donovan is the other obvious one. I think the more and more I think about it, the more and more he makes the most sense, like even more than Polanco, for the Mariners right now, because he has that positional versatility. He can play second and third. So it covers you in the event of Ben Williamson, Colt Emerson, or Cole Young sucking. He also can play outfield in the pinch if you need him to. And then that maybe that gives you more versatility to get a more full-time DH guy. Or not full-time, but like bench guy you can DH when Cal's not DHing. I don't know. Brandon Donovan just feels like it makes more sense. But Polanco, still I think they're probably wanting Polanco back. But it was reported that he wants a four-year contract. His agent is talking about a four-year contract. I don't think any team is going to give him 4 years, but that might just be what it takes. Like, I see a lot more people throwing around the, like, if you, the phrase this offseason that's like, if you are, if you stick to your guns and your rational thinking, anytime you're trying to acquire a player, you will likely never sign or trade for a player. Like, sometimes you just have to maybe overpay to get a guy that you want because of the circumstances of the offseason, you know? But I don't see any team giving Polanco, who's 32, 4 guaranteed years on that knee, respectfully, to Jorge Polanco. I know the Mariners offered him 2. I can see a 3 fully guaranteed, maybe 3 plus a vesting option or something. I don't know. But it just doesn't sound like, it doesn't sound like it's close with him. Like, at least we're seeing teams that are interested in reports for Polanco, and I still think it would be good for the Mariners to bring him back. But 4 years is just, I mean, you're his agent. You're going to try to get him as many years as much money as possible, so it's not crazy. I just don't see any team giving him 4 years, but who? Maybe the Pirates will just give him 4 years. Why the hell not, you know? But that's where they're at. I'm going to leave this podcast saying I don't think Polanco is close to signing. Book it. The next 48 hours, Polanco signs with the Mariners or something. But we'll see. But that's where I'm going to cut this podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. If any other really big news with the Mariners happens, I'll probably hop on and record. But I will be probably taking all of the week of Christmas off through New Year's, likely. But if anything huge happens, I'll be hopping on. But again, as always, I appreciate you listening this far. If you are, thank you very much. Hope you have a very happy holidays. And I'll leave you with a potentially final Go Mariners of the 2025 calendar year.